eyes opened. His right hand patted his chest. He sat up. He went through the same crude forensic self-examination as Crowley. "Paint," he said. Crowley nodded. "What are they playing at?" said Aziraphale. "I don't know," said Crowley, "but I think it's called silly buggers." His tone suggested that he could play too, and do it better. It was a game. It was tremendous fun. Nigel Tompkins, assistant head purchasing, squirmed through the undergrowth, his mind aflame with some of the more memorable scenes of some of the better Clint Eastwood movies. And to think he believed that management training was going to be boring, too. There had been a lecture, but it had been about the paint guns and all the things you should never do with them. And Tompkins had looked at the fresh young faces of his rival trainees as, to a man, they resolved to do them all if there was half a chance of getting away with it. If people told you business was a jungle and then put a gun in your hand, then it was pretty obvious to Tompkins that they weren't expecting you to simply aim for the shirt. What it was all about was the corporate head hanging over your fireplace. Anyway, it was rumoured that someone over in United Consolidated had done his promotion prospects a considerable amount of good by the anonymous application of a high-speed earful of paint to an immediate superior, causing the latter to complain of little ringing noises in important meetings and eventually to be replaced on medical grounds. And there were his fellow trainees, fellow sperms, to switch metaphors, all struggling forward in the knowledge that there could only ever be one chairman of Industrial Holdings PLC, and that the job would probably go to the biggest prick. Of course, some girl with a clipboard from personnel had told them that the courses they were going on were just to establish leadership potential, group cooperation, initiative, and so on. The trainees had tried to avoid one another's faces. It had worked well so far. The white water canoeing had taken care of Johnston, punctured eardrum, and the mountain climbing in Wales had done for Whittaker, groin strain. Tompkins thumbed another paint pellet into the gun and muttered business mantras to himself. "Do unto others before they do unto you. Kill or be killed. Either shit or get out of the kitchen. Survival of the fittest. Make my day." He crawled a little nearer to the figures by the statue. They didn't seem to have noticed him. When the available cover ran out, he took a deep breath and leapt to his feet. "Okay, douchebags, grab some Where one of the figures had been, there was something dreadful. He blacked out. Crowley restored himself to his favourite shape. "I hate having to do that," he murmured. "I'm always afraid I'll forget how to change back, and it can ruin a good suit." "I think the maggots were a bit over the top myself," said Aziraphale, but without much rancour. Angels had certain moral standards to maintain, and so, unlike Crowley, he preferred to buy his clothes rather than wish them into being from raw firmament, and the shirt had been quite expensive. "I mean, just look at it," he said. "I'll never get the stain out." "Miracle it away," said Crowley, scanning the undergrowth for any more management trainees. "Yes, but I'll always know the stain was there. You know, deep down, I mean," said the angel. He picked up the gun and turned it over in his hands. "I've never seen one of these before," he said. There was a pinging noise, and the statue beside them lost an ear. "Let's not hang around," said Crowley. He wasn't alone. "This is a very odd gun, you know. Very strange." "I thought your side disapproved of guns," said Crowley. He took the gun from the angel's plump hand and sighted along the stubby barrel. "Current thinking favours them," said Aziraphale. "They lend weight to moral argument, in the right hands, of course." "Yeah?" Crowley snaked a hand over the metal. "That's all right, then. Come on." He dropped the gun onto the recumbent form of Tompkins and marched away across the damp lawn. The front door of the manor was unlocked. The pair of them walked through unheeded. Some plump young men in army fatigues, spattered with paint, were drinking cocoa out of mugs in what had once been the sisters' refectory, and one or two of them gave them a cheery wave. Something like a hotel reception desk now occupied one end of the hall. It had a quietly competent look. Aziraphale gazed at the board on an aluminium easel beside it. In little plastic letters let into the black fabric of the board were the words, "August 20 to 21, United Holdings, Holdings PLC, Initiative Combat Course." Meanwhile, Crowley had picked up a pamphlet from the desk. It showed glossy pictures of the manor, with special references to its jacuzzis and indoor heated swimming pool, and on the back was the sort of map that conference centres always have, which makes use of a careful misscaling to suggest that it is handy for every motorway exit in the nation, while carefully leaving out the labyrinth of country lanes that in fact surrounds it for miles on every side. "Wrong place,"